You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Weekden Update, your weekly dose of everything Grizzlies, presented by the Grizzden Podcast and the Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I'm joined every week by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It could be better as far as the Grizz universe, but in general, I'm doing well.
The Grizzlies are 0-3. That is tied for last in the NBA and the Western Conference, obviously. They are 26th in offense with 103 rating, 13th in defense with 108.5 rating. They're 24th. In net rating, which that's at a negative 5.5. We start every podcast with who's up and who's down. So, John, I'll let you start. Who's up for you?
Who's up for me? There's a couple candidates, but because one of them didn't play all three games, but I'm just going to say who's up would be Tillman. He has not played perfectly. In fact, I would say last night's game against the Wizards, he was not as good as he has been, but he has just been solid. He is, like, as far as the way the Grizzlies have been the last 2-3 years of plug and play, next man up, I just think Tillman has done everything you would want him to do. He is being who we want and hope him to be. Could he finish a couple more shots around the rim? Yes. But grabbing boards, playing really good defense, including against the best player in the world on Friday night in Jokic, I just think he's up in just the sense that he was someone who I didn't even, like most of us, I think, thought wouldn't be on the roster. To now it's like, oh man, he's just a really good, solid player. That's a position I'm not as worried about. So
I've got more on Tillman later. But my who's up is Marcus Smart. Already he's second on the team in points, first in assists, first in steals. To me, he's been everything that was marketed before the season started and more. And the more is the intangible aspect. Like, I already can see why the Celtics just absolutely loved him and everything about him. He was the first man up off the bench every time when there was a timeout and he wasn't playing. Like, the encourager of the group. You heard his press conference after game one where it's really easy to be down after a tough game, and he was the one that said, guys, it's just one game out of 82. And so he's been, he is the leader, I think, right now in terms of morale. Obviously, Bane Bane he's looking for every time down the floor. So Bane's going to be like the Grizzlies' marketed leader, but I think Smart is the engine behind it all. And so it's been a great revelation for me to see Marcus play. My who's down is Kenny Lofton Jr. With the lack of bigs playing with Steven Adams out and then Santi Aldama, who has yet to play a game, you and I both thought, and probably a lot of Grizzlies fans thought, that Kenny Lofton Jr. would have an opportunity, especially when we talked about preseason, what the extra roster spot might mean when we're going to sign a center, which we saw that news as well, which we'll get to. But he has only played 5 minutes thus far and hasn't made a huge impact. You had his dad already on Twitter expressing concern about the lack of playing time and questioning some coaching decisions there. But my who's down is Kenny Lofton Jr.
Okay, my who's down would be David Roddy. Honestly, I've been kind of what I was, the opposite of Tillman. And it's like Tillman's doing what we want him to do. Roddy is not. I've been very disappointed. He did, you know, he's actually not shot it terribly. But my big issue has just been turnovers, weird decision making, in a way that I just was not expecting from someone so old. Like Zaire's had a little bit of that, but for Roddy, he's an older player. I just expected more of him as far as not turning the ball over. Just having a little more confidence. He just seems very unsure, and that's just really surprising from what I expected of him. I've been really disappointed, so he's my who's down.
Let's get to our news and notes. Before we get to the games from this past week, we have to talk about the signing that hasn't yet happened technically, but Shams announced last night that the Grizzlies would plan to sign Bismack Biyombo, who is the center that we actually referenced on our last podcast. I think he was number one on my list out there of the free agents to sign who are at the center position and seem to fit what we need in this 20 game. He's going to be signed in the on the sixth game in time for that, and so I think Thursday is the day where he can actually finalize the deal. If you're unfamiliar with Bismack Biyombo, he's been sort of an NBA journeyman. He's only 31 years old, though. I could have sworn he was in his like mid-30s. 6'9", but he plays above his height for sure. 31 years old, like I said. He last year had an 18.3% defensive rebounding percentage. Just by comparison, Jaren is at like a 15.2, and that 3% gap is a huge one when you're talking about like percentile overall in the league. 9.8% offensive rebound. Jaren, by comparison, is at a 5.8%. And then also Bismack Biyombo and Jaren were both in the 100th percentile of block percentage. So he's a screener that is just perfect for that complementary role that we've seen Steven Adams play with Jaren. And not that he's going to be, you know, any sort of force per se, but he's going to fill in hopefully some gaps of what we need. And I was encouraged by that announcement. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I was good. Obviously, in the podcast we recorded last week, he was one of the first names you threw on there as here's a guy to get for that 20 game run that we're going to get after Jaw's roster spot becomes available. So I was glad that then said that would be a great. I think that's great. Obviously, I think he's kind of just like he's a poor man's version of Steven Adams. The one big thing is just he's not going to be a great passer. But as far as the setting screens and just getting rebounds and just being a physical presence in the paint, I think he will be very helpful for us.
All right, let's get to the games. What was the biggest takeaway that you had from these three losses thus far?
Oh, man. So the one, I mean, kind of just the thematic takeaway for me was just trying to figure out who we are in a post-Adams world. And just, we're just in survival mode, honestly. I just think with all the injuries and kind of reshaping who we are, how we're going to win games, because it's the theme over the three, one of the harder parts, I know you might have seen more trends is, and there's a few, but the really hard thing is just, it's like we lost a different way in all three games and we played a different way. And there wasn't this overall sense of, oh, well, you know, we won the possession battle, we dominated the paint, but we missed a bunch of outside shots, which I think has been our issue in the past. We're actually struggling in the paint. And, you know, like last night against the Wizards, we shot really well, but just shot horribly in the paint and turned the ball over a bunch, you know. And so there's this weird sort of how are we going to win? And I feel like we're really trying to figure that out, especially when, honestly, we're just without five of our best best rotation players. I mean, that looking in the year, we're down five guys right now who would have, you know, played in a rotation. One of them we knew in Brandon Clark. One of them we knew for 25 games in Ja. Steven Adams, obviously, there was a possibility, but that came, you know, right before the season. And then we definitely were not expecting to not have Luke Kennard and Santi Aldama. And just the accumulation of all those things just means we're asking a lot of guys to do things I don't know if they're prepared to do. And so you get this sort of weird shakeup. So in that sense, it's just kind of like, it's hard, and it's almost like, man, I wish we could, you know, if we had put the effort we gave against the Nuggets, we would have won the other two games with that effort. We just decided to play our best game against the best team in the world, and we decided to play our worst game against the worst team in the world. And that's just like, unfortunately, that's sort of how it goes.
Yeah, I went ahead because I was thinking through what is to blame for the three losses. And of course, number one, you have to say, is injury. I ranked the players in order of what I thought, you know, if you were forcing me to just put them 1 through 15 in terms of if they're healthy, where do I rank them in terms of the roster? I have John number 1, Jaren number 2, Bane number 3. I actually have Marcus Smart number 4. Luke Kennard I put at number 5, Steven Adams number 6, Brandon Clark number 7, Santi Aldama 8, Tillman 9, Zaire 10, Conchar 11, Roddy 12, Rose 13, Laravia 14, Junior Lofton 15. You could argue with me about how those guys are ranked, of course. But by my count, the five guys that are injured are our number one player and then our number 5, 6, 7, and 8 players.
Right.
And you look at what I think has been the culprit, like the number 2 point of the culprit has been the bench. And you think about Luke Kennard, Brandon Clark, Santi Aldama would be your first three off the bench. And that's what you're missing. And when you go even further, right, down, and the other part of this too is Kennard, Steven Adams, BC, really, I would say Steven Adams, BC, and even Ja to an extent, are these types of players that fit inside of a bigger team concept and have the ability to elevate that team concept if you have the right pieces around. Obviously, Jaren, Bane, and Smart to me are a bit more flexible in how you can fit them in any team concept. But like, so the guys that we're missing are so specialty. You know, Ja's the superstar, and then Steven Adams does the dirty work. Luke Kennard is the elite shooter, and then BC, of course, you have to have some shooters around him, but he's the hustle guy. It's just like the perfect storm of who we're missing. And if you move forward to even look at the bench right now, I pulled our quarter by quarter plus minus totals.
Yeah.
First quarter, we're a -7 thus far through three games. Second quarter, -24.
Yep.
And you look at the trends, and you see second quarter is obviously where you play most of your bench. And then third quarter is -3. Fourth quarter is a +16. So, I mean, it's very, very obvious where the weak right spots are. And I'll get a bit more into like unpacking that bench unit that we have to work with right now. But what are any more thoughts that you have?
No, I mean, and I think we're just going along with that. And we didn't have Conchar, who you had again in front of a bunch of other bunch guys. We didn't have him for game one.
Yep,
and honestly, true. I think he didn't play as much last night, but I think that is this. He was gone for most of the preseason due to personal reasons. So they kept him out game one. They played him a lot of minutes in game two because he played really well. And he played limited minutes last night. And I think that was really just, he just couldn't do it. He just, you know, was not in the right shape compared to everybody else coming off a back-to-back, which is another thing too. You know, I mean, that back-to-back sense, it's also just an accumulation effect. Is I personally think that like a Derrick Rose normally with a full healthy roster probably would not have played last night in a back-to-back. And a lot of these guys, minutes would have been different, but we have to play all the guys we have because we just don't have that many guys. And so you see a Derrick Rose actually have a really good game against the Nuggets, and his plus minus last night was okay. But I'll tell you, watching the game, I felt like he was struggling big
Agreed.
Time, turned the ball over in some key times, missed some defensive assignments. And that to me is, not only is he older, you just can't expect somebody his age to have, if he plays really well in one game against a really good team, to come back the very next day and have a good game again. So it's just that accumulation of that is just really, really hard. And so I just think injuries is by far the biggest factor going on. And, you know, and I'll say also just, you know, people get upset. And, you know, if we lost three games in the middle of the season, it would feel less. It feels bigger losing the first three games. And so I hope we get a win soon, and we'll get to that later. But one of the things that, you know, it is hard to look at and say, man, the first game we just didn't shoot well. They shot better than us. Game two, we played the best team. We actually played really well, and maybe we can get into that game more. And then last night was a back-to-back, and guess what? Every single team that played the first back-to-back of the season lost in the NBA this season. And I know it's frustrating because we played a bad team in our back-to-back, as frustrating I am, that is the case, and it still sucks. But all three of our losses, even with, like, take away the injuries, like, if you just look at the data, would be explainable. That doesn't make it any better. But I just think that is, like, the we're not, you know, and the secondly, we're not getting killed. Like, some of these other teams, I mean, like, if I'm the Jazz, I'm upset right now because we played a Phoenix Suns team with Kevin Durant, and a bunch of minimums because Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal sat out, and we lost by like 25 points. And of course they're saying, well, it was a back-to-back. Well, we came out a back-to-back and we actually were competitive. We were competitive in all three of these games. Like, we could have won any of these three games. And that's what's so hard about that 0-3 start. But I think at least that's a little encouraging to me as well, that I feel like that team culture thing is still there. Like, we could have just decided to wrap it up down 25 against the Wizards, but we brought it back. And honestly, except for some kind of clutch mess ups that I take to be some new guys on our team and people playing that shouldn't be playing, I think we could have won that game last night.
If you look at the starter unit, we're plus six when our overall thus far with our five starters, and notably Zaire Williams is starting and Xavier Tillman is starting.
Right.
And those are two guys that aren't expected to be in your best five-man unit moving forward, especially with everyone healthy and back from suspension. To break down the bench woes a little bit more, so we have, I'm going to go in order of possessions played thus far for our five guys that have played off the bench. David Roddy, 138 possessions. He's a minus 3.1. That's still 52nd percentile. And I would say that his turnovers have been extremely notable. He played probably his worst game I've ever seen him play in that Nuggets game. It was just, I mean, he was actively hurting us in that respect.
And he also tends to turn it over in a way that the other team scores too.
100%. Because he's usually driving. He's usually the one trying to make the play. I will say he's second right now on the team in three-point shooting. And that's really what's keeping him, I would say, out of the real analytics doghouse.
I would
right
be
now.
Super what's down on him if he hadn't been hitting those corner
he's
threes.
Shooting 44% right now. Derrick Rose has played the second most possessions off the bench. He's a minus 5.2. That's 45th percentile. So, you know, he has had his moments. The forum gets rocking when Derrick Rose comes in, as expected. And, everybody who's listened to this now for the last couple of months knows my thoughts on Rose. And I think there's some areas where that has been confirmed in my eyes of the concerns there. But he overall, I think, has had some moments, and he hasn't been the reason why we've lost. John Conchar, 111 possessions, only a minus 0.5, because normally he's playing with all these other bench dudes who have been really struggling. And it's amazing because that minus 0.5 is 73rd percentile. So, like, that's still in almost the top quarter here in his two games that he's played.
If he had played three, he would have easily been my what's up. I'll just throw that out there right now.
Trust me. I called for it before the Nuggets game, and gosh, he delivered in just so many little ways that you have to watch the game. Yeah.
I love what you called him, the walking extra possession. I love that.
100%. That's what he is. And then we get down to, here's the entree. Jake LaRavia, 101 possessions, minus 19.4. That is second percentile. I just don't see much that's encouraging about LaRavia. He has a really pretty looking shot. He made a turnaround jumper in the Nuggets game that looked pretty good. He's made a couple threes in other parts of the game. With his size and what is his theoretical playmaking ability, and I just had a lot more hope, I guess, going in, and at the same time I didn't. It's kind of like I feel like I know what Jake is, and it's not somebody who comes in and makes winning plays. If you're not going to be taking a whole bunch of shots with his skill set, frankly, I'm not sure why you're out there. And so that's, to me, the biggest adjustment that needs to be made. And I think it will be, because you saw the first preseason game, like, he was definitely like the 11th man. And we obviously had Santi Aldama out there. We had Luke Kennard out there. So I don't expect Laravia to get these big minutes, but I think it's very indicative of what we're going to get when he does get these opportunities, because it's not looking good thus far. And he would be, I mean, he's at the very bottom of my list right now of who needs to be playing in these games. Finally, you have Kenny Lofton, only 13 possessions, but he was a minus 9.1 in those 13 possessions. So overall, you take out Laravia and Lofton, you have a big positive, in my opinion, in Conchar. Roddy and Rose have just been a mixed bag, and you really need Roddy to pop more than he has. But yeah, that's, to me, the Laravia number was absolutely shocking when I looked at it.
No, I mean, it's been very disappointing. I mean, we're looking, you know, at that draft class, because that's sort of, we've drafted so well. And, you know, even our one worry about Aldama is kind of, you know, basically we've 180'd on Aldama because he's looked really, really good. But I am definitely waiting. I mean, we're trying to be patient with Roddy and Laravia especially. But yeah, I mean, it looks like, you know, right now there's just not much promising there for Laravia. And again, you know, I'm feeling Kenny Lofton right now. It's very much that, like, he's got about 22 more games left on a Grizzlies roster.
Because if Biombo pops for us,
yes,
and we could use him the rest of this season, right, you're cutting that last roster spot, and you're signing Biombo to a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
Can I zoom through a couple more stats with you?
Yeah, sure. That'd be great.
Here's some encouragement for everybody after all those down numbers. Santi Aldama and Luke Kennard. I took what their numbers were without Ja Morant and without Steven Adams on the floor last year. Santi Aldama was a plus 2.2, and this is with a very big sample size. And then Luke Kennard was a plus 6.3. Right. There's obviously concern. Luke Kennard was, in my opinion, one of the main reasons we lost against New Orleans. He has to shoot a lot better than he did, especially when he's as wide open as he was. There's been some conspiracy theories about his injury, about, you know, what's happening with the roster. I know I heard Chris Vernon talk about that, where guys are kind of like looking in behind them and nervous about a deal that's going to get done with them. I don't think that's the case with Luke Kennard, in my opinion. I think he's going to get right because we have a lot of data that indicates that he is. So that's encouragement. When they come back, our bench unit should look a lot more improved. Right. Also, a couple other final reasons to blame for the loss. Turnovers. 11% was like the median last year. And you go down the list of our guys right now on turnover percentage. Marcus Smart, 17%. Zaire Williams, 16.9%. Xavier Tillman, 15.4%. Desmond Bane, 12.2%. David Roddy, 17.4%. Derrick Rose, 14%. John Conchar, 13%, which he's not a turnover guy at all. And then Luke Kennard at 12%. It's just every single guy except for Jaren Jackson is over that 11% mark in turnovers. And that's just been like the Achilles heel of this team thus far.
Right.
Final thing I'll say, three-point shooting, that's been the obvious struggle. We right now are first in the entire NBA of the percentage of shots that are three-pointers in terms of field goal attempts. We 43.7% of our shots are threes. Yeah. We're only 19th, though, in three-point percentage. We are 51.4% on corner threes, though. Like, that's where we are making our money, 25% on above-the-break threes, which is everything that's not on the corners. So that's the issue. It's the above the break threes. But if in our offense, which the way it's flowing right now, you can tell we're trying to, you know, when you penetrate, you're trying to look outside and you're putting guys in the corners that can hit shots. And that's where we're coming back in these games that we've been falling behind. And so it's encouraging because I want us to evolve into a team that can do a bit more of that.
Yes.
Obviously we need the field goal percentage to increase. But, those numbers were also surprising to me.
So. Right. Well, so one of the big thing, and this is where people should have hope, because it's very striking, because we are used to with having Jaha, who's one of the best handles in the NBA, and you have Tyus, who is the best at not turning the ball over in the NBA. He just does not turn it over. So it is very striking that we've had a lot of guys turnover, especially on the dribble, these first three games. And part of that is, honestly, Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose turn the ball over more than Tyus Jones. Now, I think that Marcus Smart brings way other things to the table, and we've talked about the Tyus Jones thing. But so we have brought in two new guys to our rotation who are both point guard guards. We have also installed a new offense. These are all things that make for more turnovers. And this is one of the beauties of basketball is we do have an 82-game season. You peak at the end because you develop chemistry and all these sorts of things. And this is one of the issues. We have a little less continuity this year. Now, we throw on that injuries. You throw on that people not being available. It just makes it even worse. And especially, honestly, in like the Adams, the Aldama, you have a bunch of people in the rotations now playing with people they didn't even probably play with in practice. And so just all of that compounds to make some turnovers. And so you do have things like, you know, just multiple times we just have guys cutting and when people don't expect them to cut and they throw the ball out of bounds. So I expect those things to go. And the other thing is I would say is, yeah, I just think part of a new offense too is getting used to where you are, where you're getting the ball. I mean, in the Nuggets game alone, Desmond Bain had, I think, four wide open three-pointers in the first quarter of the Nuggets game and just missed them all. Like, who knows if Desmond Bain's on fire and goes 3-for-4 in that first quarter, that Nuggets game could be a totally different game. Same thing. The game one against the Pelicans, we shot 5-for-21 on open threes. 5-for-21. And while we're not used to having a great shooting team, these are terrible shooters who can't hit open threes. And I just think those are the things that will solve themselves. You know, I do think we're going to shoot better. And I do like that our offense seems to be creating open looks. We just have to hit them. Like Luke Kennard, best three-point shooter in the NBA last year, went 0-for-5. You know, I just think that's just not going to happen very often. So I think there are those sort of reasons to be encouraged. The other thing that I think that I'm also encouraged by is, yes, we gave up a lot of defensive rebounds. We had a 15 deficit against the Pelicans. You know, I blame some of that on us just missing a ton of shots. But we have not just been getting destroyed on the boards. So far, over three games, we have done, I think overall, like we haven't just been decimated in the possession battle. And if we have, it's been more turnovers than rebounds. That I think in general, although people are going to always complain about Jaren's rebounding numbers, I do think he is doing a good job of boxing out his man. And I think we're team rebounding well. And I think that was a huge worry, Steven Adams. And that has been, I felt better about that than I think I would have before the season started.
Yeah, you looked at what was the most competitive game against the Nuggets of this three-game stretch, and if you look down just the team stats, everything is almost identical. It was actually spooky. At the third quarter, I was looking up at the board at the game, and I just... everything was almost matching. We were actually leading in rebounding, which was not typical, especially after we were at a minus 15 rebounding margin in the Pelicans game, which can be explained by all the missed threes. And at the same time, it was the three-point percentage. And I felt like after the game that Bain had against the Pelicans, everyone in the Grizz Nation, if you will, was like, wow, okay, this is going to be an every night thing. Like, and unfortunately, Bane has to do this every night,
right,
to give us a shot. And then he comes out against the Nuggets and then, frankly, too, against the Wizards early on, yeah, and just couldn't hit a shot,
yeah,
in the first half of those games. And, you're just not going to win if your best player, your best offensive player, doesn't hit his shots. And you need a lot more in terms of your reserves, which is why, again, I go back to the bench and just the struggles there. What else did you see from these three games before we move on?
I think that's one. I just think that for Bane, I think life as main offensive player and also top facilitator and someone who's trying to play really good defense. And I just think it's going to take him a while to get used to it. I actually think he's capable of that. But I think with the Nuggets, I mean, one of those things where he did get a lot of open shots, he didn't make them. And then just like they basically were like KCP was just on him. and they were hedging another guy every time Bane got the ball. And obviously, if we have Jaw, that's just not happening. But that is what Bane's going to have to do for these first 25 games. And I think this is one of those things that's sad now, but long term will pay awesome dividends for him. But he's just going to have to get used. And I think in the Wizards game, he felt that out and then had a really good second half compared to the first. But he's going to have to really pick his spots. I do think that some of that just being winded and stuff, he's not finishing around the rim as well as he did last year. So I'm a little concerned about that. And that's just in general. That's a big trend for us. We're just not points in the paint dominant team like we used to be. And that's not shocking when Jaw and Steven Adams are gone. And that's the thing that I think we're going to have to figure out. But I liked in the Nuggets game, we got to the free throw line way more. We attacked more. I'd like for us to get back with that. I think in the Wizards and the Pelicans, because like it seems like these teams that aren't that great defensively, we're like sort of settling for threes. I mean, I like the amount of threes we're shooting, but I think sometimes we settle a little too early just because they're not guarding in the same way. But the Nuggets actually playing better, more aggressive defense on us, like forced us to not be able to shoot threes because we're actually being guarded and to drive more. And I would like to see a little bit more of that. I know we're missing Jaw, but I just think we need to get the line a little bit more, because that's also been another thing. You know, just we need to create a little bit more points in the paint and not just be completely reliant on the three.
What do you say to those people that are ready to tank, that are sounding every alarm bell that we have after these three games and what we've seen?
Yeah, I would say that the first game was a shot variance game. The second game, we played literally the team that I and many other people think are going to repeat as NBA Finals. And by the way, and then we played the Wizards on a back-to-back where I think I walked out of the gym against the Nuggets. I don't know if you did. And I was telling Lee, I actually was excited that we looked that good against the Nuggets, but I was also like, but I just don't know how we're going to come out against the Wizards, because we expended a lot of energy to stay with the Nuggets, and that scared me. And so it doesn't surprise me that we had that really flat first half against the Wizards. But I would say with all that, one thing that encourages me is we're down and out. We played three teams that are all fully healthy. I mean, those teams have all of their best guys, all of their starters, including the Nuggets. And we stayed with all of them and had chances to win all three games. We didn't get blown out by 20. We didn't look terrible. And I think the fact that we were competitive in all three games should bring us forward. And, you know, and I think two of those teams are good teams, one being a great team. But, I mean, the Pelicans are going to be a hovering around 500 team. I think fully healthy, we're better than them. I think we should have won that game. You know, obviously the Wizards game was a disappointment. And so... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, but I just think that if we had lost three games in February, nobody would be skies falling, because we'd have a bigger sample size. And so I think
this is all we have.
That is all we have. And I think that there's a lot of the narratives that people are worried about, like, oh, well, we're going to look weird on offense because we don't have Tyus Jones. We're going to just get killed on the boards. You know, we don't have enough people. All these young draft picks aren't good enough. Like, some of these narratives are sort of playing out. And so I think that feeds into the, oh, we're just not as good, you know, as we think we are. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I don't know if we're going to go 6-4, which was my first 10 game prediction, anymore. Maybe I'm liking your 5-5 a little better. But we also, when we made those predictions, did not expect Aldama and Luke Kennard to miss time. But with that, you know, 2 years ago, our favorite team, the team that like made everybody in the NBA fall in love with them, that won like 56 games and had this great, guess what? They started out 6-4. Like it happens. Like we need to like take a breath and be okay with 0-3. Now, if we come back and we're 1-9, you know, 2-8, well, then maybe it's time to get a little nervous. But even then, I would say, until we get Jaw back and see how we look with Jaw, I don't think we should panic in any way.
Yeah, I think 1-9 would be tough to deal with, for sure, because to me that means that we're seeing these trends that we've identified as, you know, potential problems down the line. We're seeing them continue, and if our bench plays up to what I think they can, and we get Santi and Luke back, I don't I will be concerned in terms of just like this season and what the viability of our, you know, playoff seeding will be. So I'm not totally absolving every bit of the last three games. However, if let's say we were to have had the Wizards game one, and then let's say the Pelicans game two, and then the Nuggets, you know, the third game in a back to back, like I think we're looking at 1-2 or 2-1. Like I don't think we're at 0-3. I do believe that the order of these games did matter, and what happened in them just can be really broken down, like we've broken it down on these in these last like 10 minutes to, you know, shooting and then a real lack of depth and disappointment by your fringe players who hopefully will not be getting a ton of minutes.
Well, and that's, you know, and we haven't had the Roddy game, the game. And I look at the three teams we played, and it was a Matt Ryan, not the old Falcons quarterback, you know, but the Matt Ryan who came out and had this crazy game, scoring like 20 points. You then had Peyton Watson, rookie, come out of nowhere and play awesome for the Nuggets. And then of course yesterday you had what's his name?
Kuzma.
Corey Kispert.
Yeah, Kispert.
Too. Go for like 22 points. And so, you know, I mean, I could say I'm a little annoyed because I do think we like to leave some lesser players open sometimes and let them get hot. But at the end of the day, like we've had a fringe guy go off in all of our games for the other team, and we're due for one of those. Yeah. You know, we're due to have one of our guys do something like that. So
let's pause for a quick message from our sponsors, and then we'll get into what we need to know for this upcoming week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's talk about this week. We have the Mavericks coming to town. The game is on Monday at 7 p.m. Right now, the Mavericks are third on offense and 23rd in defense. We then, on Wednesday, have a game in Utah at 8 p.m. Central Time. Right now, Utah's 15th on offense, 30th on defense. And then on Friday, we have a game at 9 p.m. Central Time in Portland. Portland right now is 23rd on offense and 28th in defense. And so 7 p.m., 8 p.m., and 9 p.m., we had a 6 p.m. game last Friday. Yeah. So they are really keeping us on our toes in terms of our calendar. But let's look ahead to these three games. Obviously, Luka Doncic is the player right now for the Mavericks. He has over 40% usage, which if you're not familiar with that term, it means basically like the shots and assists and plays that are resulting from the ball being in Luka's hands. That is just an astounding number, and it's exactly what we expected. He's been playing very well, just pulled a complete rabbit out of his hat in one of these games down the stretch to have Dallas win. They are, to me at least, a team that is beatable if you can control Luka. They have they're almost as thin as we are when you look down the roster, like in where they sit right now today. And it's going to be a challenge, but I'm glad it's at home. I think we have, you know, obviously a big rest day that's happening. We're recording on Sunday, by the way, that's happening right now. And we'll be ready to get a win. I think we'll be a little bit hungrier than the Mavericks. What do you expect for that?
No, I expect that too. I mean, again, this is a team that you want to be able to attack the paint against. We did that with the Nuggets, which is another team like that, that they don't really have like a classic rim protector. So I hope we do that. I hope we take advantage of that. But they're just, I mean, as a Luka hater, known Luka hater, and he's awesome. I still just don't like him. But I watched both the games they played. You know, they should have lost both games, honestly. The Spurs just kind of threw it away and did some weird stuff. Like, I don't think Spurs are interested in maximizing their wins this year, but they were beating the Mavs almost the whole game until the very end. And then obviously the last game, you had the Luka magic of him hitting like them being down and then him hitting like three straight threes.
A one-handed three-pointer falling out of bounds.
It reminded me of that terrible shot he hit against us a couple years ago, like a kind of a prayer shot that went in. banked in. But they're not like they played two very average to below average teams and barely won. I think that's kind of where they are. I think if we come out and play well, we should beat them at home. Like, so I will be disappointed if we don't look good and lose to the Mavs. I really do feel pretty confident about this one. I think, and honestly, I think really cool to watch Marcus Smart guard Luka.
Yeah. At Utah, they're a team who's rebuilding. They really had their first season, I would say, in this kind of youth movement last year. Lauri Markkanen was a breakout player for them. He's still playing well again this year. They have some guys, you know, Jordan Clarkson, Walker Kessler is a really good rim protector down low. So really, I wish we had Bismack Biyombo one game earlier because he would be a good matchup for Kessler. So Jaren will have his work cut out for him. So will Tillman, obviously. And then if you can keep, you know, Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson at bay, you know, they have some young guys too that they're trying to work in. So Utah is a very difficult place to play though, due to the altitude. They and Denver have the best home court advantages objectively in the NBA. And so it's going to be, I think if we're 0-4 going to this game, I am going to worry because it does feel like one of those that's a toss up with the roster that we currently have. And then Portland on Friday, this is the one where I think they are in a full tank. They do not look good right now, and Scoot Henderson's exciting, but this is one where even, again, with the roster we have, if you have Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson, I think you have the two best players in the game, and this right here, like, I really
hope... And their best offensive player, Anthony Simons, is out.
100%. That's a good note. So, to me, this is a 2-1 week. Hopefully... Yes. You can even go 3-0, and I think that's realistic. It's on the table. Yeah. We have to make shots, obviously, to have that happen. Right. But Utah and Portland are two winnable games, and if I were to choose one, though, it would probably be Utah that I'm most worried about.
Yeah, and one thing, I've watched Utah a couple times. So on our fantasy league we're in, I have Walker Kessler. So I'm very frustrated right now because they're doing some weird stuff with him. The Hardy's trying to experiment with five out offenses and stuff in Utah, and so it's been very interesting. And so I actually I think we are catching them at a good time early because they have just not looked good for whatever reason. You know, Lauri Markkanen's still been good, but Jordan Clarkson had just kind of been weird. And obviously, when we played them early last year and lost to them, they had a lot of guys they've now traded away. So they do have a little bit of a different energy, and it does look like they're not in that we're trying to maximize wins. I think they're trying to experiment with some stuff, it feels like. And so hopefully, despite the advantage and despite our injuries, hopefully we can catch them. And of course, then the other thing is, you know, we will find out today, hopefully, but the hope is that Luke Kennard is back for the Mavs game. And we hope that there is an Aldama appearance this week. I mean, that would be the hope. They did say day to day. Usually if it's more than like a week or two, they'll say 1 to 2 weeks, but they said day to day. So that would be the hope. I would be extremely excited if we saw Aldama Wednesday against the Jazz.
Yep, for sure. That would be huge for us. All right. Lastly, let's get to MVP of the week. I'll start us off. I have Xavier Tillman. He was +3 against New Orleans, 17 points, 12 rebounds, absolutely held his own. And then the second game, I thought, you know, obviously he was less in terms of counting stats, but he held Nikola Jokic to 22 points, which I would venture to say that's going to be one of his lower point totals this season. And then thirdly, he was 2-for-2 from three against Washington, one of the rare players who actually shot well. And then he has already taken 10 threes this season thus far and is shooting 40%. So I kind of joked about Tillman, this whole three-point thing early on, but the shot looks really good. If you look at him at the free throw line too, you can tell he is, you know, he's really worked this offseason to make, and that shooting stroke looks really good. I think he will be a threat from out there. Obviously very small sample size right now, but Tillman was my most encouraging player, mainly because it was such a necessary component to our team to even survive the last three games, and he brought it home.
Yeah. So you have Tillman. I had Tillman in my What's Up. He was a close, and people are going to tell me I'm too much of a Jaren lover on this one. But the one predictable thing in all of this has been we're just incredible on defense when Jaren is on the floor. You know, we win when he is on the floor. Even in the Wizards game, even like I was laughing, we got destroyed in the first half, and yet he still was positive at the plus minus. He was frustrating that first game, especially. He's stayed out of getting fouled out, but he's had a little more foul issues than I would want. So it's not a perfect MVP, but I just am like the fact that when he's on the floor, we're an awesome defensive team, and he's been good on offense. And I actually think for him, it's still just them trying to figure out in the offensive flow how to get him more touches. And those sorts of things, and him getting used to double teamed. But so over that, because of that, I think Tillman's right there neck and neck with him, but I'll go with Jaren.
Yeah. It's hard to have an MVP when you've lost three games in a row.
And Bain was great in game one. He was too inconsistent in game two and three, honestly, he cost us a win in game two by just not being really bad and just bad in multiple ways too, like some turnovers and force and stuff. And so I just haven't seen Jaren hurt us, that, you know, if anything, I'd like him to be more aggressive and get shot attempts. But because of that, I'm going to go with Jaren for the MVP.
Is Taylor Jenkins 2-for-2 on challenges?
He is.
I wanted to shout that out as a little, honorable mention, because that was one of his infamous weak points the last few years. And so 2-for-2 is pretty good.
Yes.
So shout out Jenkins on that. And I thought they were two very important plays.
Right.
I
think he chose them well. There were a couple in the Wizards game yesterday I kind of wanted to do, but also they weren't like very huge. They weren't big momentum turning things, so he didn't. But
yep. Well, three huge games, obviously, with where the Grizzlies are sitting this week, because we do not want to get down too far before John Morant comes in. We don't want to necessarily be questioning everything about the young guys that we've drafted the last few years. And also, we have Bismack Biyombo's debut, hopefully, this coming Friday. So we're going to be watching for that.
And I'm very hopeful. I just think the grinding we did in the first three games, even though, honestly, we never really had it, and to stay in these games, I think that's going to prove dividends this week, I hope. So.
Well, thanks for joining us in the second episode of the Weekend Update this season, but the first one that's felt normal. So we're going to have this format moving forward, and we're going to try to fit as much in a time constraint as possible. We're trying to go, about 45 minutes, which we did today. So thanks to everybody for joining us. Please subscribe to the Grizz Den podcast now that the season is rolling and is ramping up. Share the episode with your friends. It really does help us. For Kraft, I'm Will. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next week then.